Welcome to A Super Conscious Leader. I'm your host, Dr. Adil Dalal, and this is a great show for you if you want to be a super conscious leader. Folks, the world is shifting at a lightning speed. Technology is rewiring the rules. Generations are clashing in values and expectations. The AI revolution is unfolding at lightning speed, and it is shifting our world, it is turning our world upside down. Stress, anxiety, burnout is at record highs. In this storm, the question isn't if change will hit you. The question is, how prepared are you when it does? Are you the leader who panics, or will you be the leader who converts the pressure into possibilities? Right now, the time is amazing for leaders, if only if you can lead with courage, with higher consciousness, and with clarity. So this show is built for you to allow you not only to overcome the storm, but to be able to make this into your greatest advantage. Remember, in the age of AI, you do not need to be superhuman. You just need to be super conscious. So welcome to the show. Your journey to the pinnacle of leadership begins here and begins now. Today. Welcome to A Super Conscious Leader. I am Dr. Adil Dalal. You're watching Now Media Television. Today we are joined by an amazing guest, Dr. Jesse Hansen. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jesse.
Thank you so much, Dr. Adil. I'm grateful to be here with you.
Thank you. Dr. Jesse is a clinical psychologist with over 25 years of experience bridging somatic psychology, neuropsychology, and ancient wisdom and traditions. He has served as a clinical director at Helix Health Group in Toronto. He has also co-founded Atma Retreats in Costa Rica and has co-founded mentalhealth.com. Jesse's mission is to help people integrate mind, body, and spirit to heal trauma and unlock their fullest potential. Dr. Jesse, truly a warm welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Adil, and just equal recognition of you and the work you're doing, and grateful that this show exists, and how beautiful to have a place where it's open forum to discuss consciousness and evolution. So feel grateful to be brought in.
Thank you. And I think what you're doing is equally important and much more important, because trauma has become it's no longer a buzzword. It is reality, and it has set in to our society and taken roots very deep. Jesse, as you know, I travel around the world, and I'm seeing that it is not just a US issue now. It is going around the world and very deep. So if you can share a little bit about how you got into this, a little bit about your background, so my audience understands the level of expertise you bring to this topic.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a saying called the wounded healer. And that is the journey of my own healing process becoming the fuel that helped me become the role of psychologist, holistic health practitioner, sound healing, all of these different elements that I love. And so that's ultimately how I got here, was being humble and deciding to look deeper into my own self and wanting to be towards super conscious. Of course, this was 25 years ago. And so I was a young Jesse, and I consider myself a world bridger. And what I mean by that is bridging ancient wisdom with modern science, bridging the best of the East and the West. There's tons of different dualities we could pull from, but these are what I learned have helped me so much on my healing journey. And some earliest trainings were that into, the social system and learning about social services and being of service that way. That didn't feel like a fit for me. I got in my early 20s, I decided to move into the world of holistic health. And at that time I was in California, so the perfect place to explore more naturopathy and holistic health. And that really opened my mind so much, and I started to really experience deep healing in my own life just from simple practices like yoga, meditation, healthier eating, diet, lifestyle choices. However, I realized by mid to late 20s that that wasn't enough, and that it required also me to dig deeper into my consciousness and really look at, you know, where I was creating my life from in terms of also, you know, shadows and trauma and things that had happened that I wanted to kind of skate over and pretend it was all fine. And lo and behold, it was that discovery process that brought me to clinical psychology, neuropsychology. And my experience was, as I entered those courses in my late 20s, after almost a decade of what most would call, colloquially speaking, soul searching, some work like that, all of a sudden I was in these courses, and I was, and I think you'll appreciate this with your expertise as well, but I was like, wow, finally, with quantum physics and neuroscience, we have science that has caught up with ancient wisdom and all of these practices I'd been studying. And so that through, you know, my almost, you know, decade of a combined master's PhD in neuropsychology until I was in my 30s. And at that point, I really entered the field as a clinical director at Helix, you mentioned, in Toronto back then. And that was my first real, you know, running my own programming, running my own, bringing people together for healing. It was absolutely incredible. And that's where I started to really, and I'd come out of Passages Malibu as well. I had a lot of my career there. I love Passages, always grateful. So that exposed me to the world of addiction and recovery. And then the last roughly 10 years, I've been working pretty much exclusively with CEOs, doctors, lawyers, more so high functioning leaders, I would call them. For sure. And so I'm grateful to kind of have brought it all full circle. And I know, like you as well, it's that if we can help one leader wake up and become super conscious, it impacts so many people. And, you know, it's amazing, right?
Truly, very well said, Jesse. I think this is the, you mentioned a word which is very interesting, is a wounded healer. So I believe that, you know, there's a saying, say, the hurt people hurt other people. People who are hurt hurt other people. But what you're saying is that pain you went through and the growth you went through actually converted you into a healer. And that is something we need to teach our youngsters too, is that pain doesn't have to be something which you then, you know, spread in the world. You can use that pain to grow yourself. So could you explain how that changed you? It is a very important thing for us to learn about.
Yeah, the shift in consciousness from pain as problem to pain as teacher.
The teacher, right? Exactly.
Pain as guide. Yes. And the acknowledgement, I think that's the first step for any of us. And that was the first step for me, and having the appropriate teachers in my path at that age that got me to think about it deeper. And I still carry that belief, and I still work with pain in my body and my emotions in that way. And if we change to pain as teacher, then all of a sudden our pain is there to just show us what's out of balance, to show us where we're turning a blind eye to some part of our psyche, perhaps, or physical pain, the old just going to push through it until I have, you know, fully torn rotator cuff, as opposed to slowing down and listening to the pain to heal the muscles.
Very true.
The rupture, right? So for me personally, and the wounded healer is, there's many references to that psychology. My most thought association is called Alex Gray. He's the his father was the one that, why we call it Gray's Anatomy, the famous TV show, as well as the medical book. He was the son of Alex Gray Sr. So he had the precision of the medical mind and the doctor mind of understanding everything about third dimensional physiology, anatomy, biology. And yet, for whatever reason, in his evolution of his father, he added in what I would call, from my nerdy language, but it would be the quantum field. It would be, he added in understanding electromagnetic energy, the different energy centers in the body, the way the nervous system works, and he creates beautiful art. And one of my favorite pieces of him is called The Wounded Healer. And it's a three-part section like this. And the first one is a human that looks like they're together. They look fine. But if you look closer, their organs are out of place, and there's like these twists and these knots within their body, and around them is not just pure light. There's maybe some serpents or skulls, something painful. Mm-hmm. And then the second image is all of that, but really blasted open, which is often mm-hmm. called by, you know, the psychology work of the hero's journey, of really opening ourselves up to see who we are. And it's very uncomfortable, right? But yet it is also part of how we expand our consciousness mm-hmm. is to start to realize what's underneath my ego, what's underneath the things right. that I want to call everything is fine. And then the third and final one is the person now fully put back together with all their wow. organs, bones, everything in balance, and they're climbing the stairways of up to pure white light. And so yeah. you get the metaphor of that from a religious and spiritual context.
Yeah, exactly.
That to me, describing that picture is more or less the journey I've been on the last 25 years now. And really yeah. everything I share with my guests and my clients is things that I've moved through myself or learned the hard way, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it's quite a powerful journey of becoming the wounded healer.
Yeah.
And to your point, Dr. Adil, you know, pain as teacher is one of the most pertinent shifts in belief structure and consciousness.
Yes.
Is that shift willing to try that on, having some guide, some support, someone to learn from or lean into mm-hmm. as we try to shift our minds, because we've been exactly. programmed to think, avoid pain at all costs, numb it, dissociate from yeah. it, Netflix it, whatever, as opposed yeah. to be with it, right? Which is the ancient teaching.
I totally agree. And I think, you know, today leaders are not in touch with themselves. That is the issue. Is I think when we are experiencing pain, go deep into it. Do not, they try to push it aside. They try to, you know, kind of get into activities so that they forget that. But if you really go deep into the pain and let yourself be in that situation for a couple of days, you will see that growth happen. It is such a powerful experience. When you're happy, be very happy. When you're really in pain, go deeper into it.
Yeah.
Ask the why. Why am I this way? The metacognition kicks in and you get some insights, Jesse, which are just amazing. So thank you for sharing this. I have one question on leaders. We are seeing, at least I am seeing, immense growth in the trauma and the pain amongst leaders. Leadership is shifting at a amazing pace. The world is really, as I said in the beginning, the show is created because leadership is no longer what it used to be. The models have to be broken. We need to create brand new models of leadership. And that is why the show exists as a superconscious leader. What has been your experience about leaders, the kind of exponential growth of pain and trauma amongst leaders right now? And I don't want to lead you into that. If you've seen it the other way, then please, you know, share that with my audience, please.
I do see it in alignment with what you share. And I wonder if maybe it would be helpful to slow that down one previous question, which is simply to better articulate the understanding of trauma as you and I understand it in our studies and mm-hmm. all that. But for not everyone always has that clarity.
Right. Folks, please stay with us. We'll be right back with Dr. Jesse Hansen. We'll be talking more about trauma and pain and how to heal yourself from within. So please don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Imagine partnering with a firm that fuses lean precision with AI foresight, turning every process into a profit engine built on the foundation of operational excellence. Hi, I am Dr. Adil Dalal, founder and CEO of Pinnacle Process Solutions. For 20 years, we have empowered over 9,500 leaders across 25 industries and 5 continents and delivered savings from $1 million to $39 million via rapid transformations using AI, digital tools, lean, agile, and Six Sigma technologies. Through our award-winning workshops, lean AI frameworks, and human-centric coaching, we elevate culture, eliminate waste, and ignite sustainable operational excellence. Elevate your people, accelerate your performance. Visit pinnacleprocess.com and reach your pinnacle today. And we're back. Let's continue this powerful conversation. Welcome back to A Super Conscious Leader. We're here with our guest, Dr. Jesse Hansen, who is an amazing psychologist and who has really healed trauma for leaders around the world. Welcome back, Dr. Hansen. We were talking in the last segment about leaders and how we are seeing exponential growth of trauma and pain amongst leaders, and how the leadership model needs to change. What have you observed as you go through your practice?
Yeah, very, very similar. And I resonate with the question. And I want to just take a couple minutes to quickly articulate my understanding of trauma so that it makes more sense to our listeners and in terms of understanding. And I think the biggest distinction and the most common thing I see as people do want to dive deeper into understanding themselves is that trauma is not only physical, sexual assaults and war vets and car accidents. Absolutely, of course, those things are trauma. Clinical language, those would be called acute trauma or often just times physical trauma. And they are, you know, they are their own process in terms of how the healing process happens for those. The other trauma that I make the loving argument that all of us have in some way, shape, or form is called developmental trauma or attachment trauma. And these are more emotional experiences. These are themes primarily of neglect, inundation, abandonment. So even the person that feels like they had the perfect childhood, but that was actually quite controlled environment, there's some trauma, because here's where I love the science of it, is in some ways it takes out the ego or the argument of, well, whatever, I don't want to believe I have trauma, or no, I'm fine. Like, well, let's actually do a brain scan. Let's actually look at your electromagnetic field. Let's study your nervous system with love, simply to say, hey, actually, there are ways in which your nervous system gets dysregulated. And I'm talking to myself as much as I'm talking to any listener. And I admit a lot of times working with more corporate leaders, I call them left brain junkies, like very much in the left brain and the mind. And
Logical,
don't necessarily want to admit or open up to much emotional processes. And so that's where the science is so helpful, because it's like, hey, you can tell me your story or the rest of your life. I'm just looking at your nervous system and your body. Exactly. And that's what it's telling me is there is trauma here, and you're amazing. You're an amazing doctor. You're an amazing CEO. And maybe part of that is from something else that happened earlier that gave you the drive to do that, right? And there's light and shadow in that, no judgment. So that to me is a key understanding of when I answer your question more deeply, is that our listeners understand developmental or attachment trauma is more insidious than we want to admit as a culture. And also that it is, in terms of the nervous system and the hard, cold science behind it, it is just as damaging, or what we would say dysregulating, as physical, sexual, acute traumas that everyone thinks of as trauma. So if we hold that lens, even if the person knows they did not have any physical, sexual trauma, but they had some kind of developmental trauma, what I see is this, Dr. Adil, is that first of all, I think you're absolutely right. Your intro is so amazing. And I love how you talk about even AI and everything. We really are living at a quite ludicrous time on the planet. And there's many things happening, and the old pressurized system of corporate leadership as a machine, as solely left-brained, as always productivity, profit. That you're right. That I believe that's at the core of it. That there needs to be a systemic shift of realizing, wait, does really money matter more than human health and happiness and brain health? And so that's what I see, is that I don't know that it's necessarily that there is more trauma necessarily coming up, but maybe that we're seeing it more, partly because the world's more ready to listen, and partly because, you know, there are, I think, more leaders that do want to, that are, you know, in secret admitting to guys like me that I have everything, but I'm not happy. Right. And it's because they're living in a pressurized consciousness that is all driven by these different, what we will commonly call stress. Yeah. But as you said, how do you turn pressure into something positive? How do you turn that into potential? You said pressure into potential. Right. That is not just luck or fate. That is someone knowing and understanding how to process trauma, how to move through a tough experience and make it great, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And it is a science, right? I mean, there are so many great stories about people who have undergone an immense amount of pressure. And, you know, if you look at stories like Henry Ford, he went bankrupt even before he started Ford. Oprah Winfrey, she basically, was told she's not meant for radio or TV. And she came out of, she was, you know, abused early on in her life. We have, you know, kind of Steven Spielberg, he was really, he was considered a failure. Walt Disney was considered a failure. How did they get to that stage? Is they converted their failure mindset into a growth mindset. And that is the secret. And what you are doing with leaders is such an important thing. And you mentioned the word stress. Does stress, could you explain the difference between trauma and stress to my audience? What is that linkage there?
Yeah, in my understanding of it, almost stress would be considered a trauma. And in the cold science of it, it's simply anytime our nervous system gets dysregulated, that's a traumatic experience. Whether or not we imprint, download, and store it as trauma or towards PTSD kind of things, that's up to how we relate to the traumatic experience, the traumatic event, right? And so there it is. I call this the EOS, the emotional operating system. So depending on my current version, am I operating on my 2-year-old V1.0 or am I at my 25-year-old V3.0 or, you know, where is my emotional operating system? That's why, and there's been tons of studies on this, I'm sure you've read them, where you can take a pool of people that went through a traumatic experience and certain ones of them PTSD and some don't, and some move through it quickly and some take a little while, never formed PTSD. It's not that the event was that, it was the same event. It's how they process, right? And so that's also at the heart of what's happening with leaders is that, they are humans. They're still human beings. And so, there is a more of a movement. The fact that this show exists, the fact that, there are other shows coming that promote this is proof that leaders are being encouraged to, feel their feelings a bit more, be human. Yeah. And I think that is what butts up against this old system where it's like, there's no room for that. Or if you show that you're a bad leader, you're weak. Whereas some of my greatest success stories of men and women that I've been able to shepherd through some turning some poop into fertilizer, let's call it.
Right.
I like that. Some of those, I look at it and they are now proud. These, and I'm talking big men of billion-dollar companies, proud to actually be able to cry in front of their teams when it's authentic. And that's the kind of leadership that we're calling for right now, to be strong and soft, to be like amber fleece.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And now with the age of AI and robotics, humanity is much more at need. That will be your differentiator as a leader. Otherwise, you will just be another robot. And that is, I think, going to be a very critical thing. And I think in the future segments, we'll be talking a little bit about the mind, body, spirit. But what do you think is the, why is the fun element missing from leadership today? It's all work, work, work. Yeah. If you understand neuroscience, your brain actually absorbs a lot more when you are having fun. So how do we teach our leaders to do something more fun, more engaging?
When I lived in Toronto, Dr. Adil, I got a lot of opportunities to go into like lunch and learns, different big corporations and all that. And it was so consistent. The ones that had ping pong tables and snack machines and like places for them, like they were by far not only the best ones to go into, just, you feel the energy of it, but also like knowing their productivity, knowing all that. So to your point, we live in a time now where we know this both neuroscientifically, even corporate culture studies show this. Yeah. And yet, and I think it's kind of circles back to the previous answer, which is that, you know, we are still kind of stuck in, let's call it a stone age of performance, and stone, yes, pun being stone, just being like a bit hard, yes, you know, and so it's still like breaking the mold. You know, I think there's still, yeah, a way in which leaders are having to break the mold, and there's a lot of resistance both from their original programming of what a business leader is, as well as possibly, right, some of the higher ups in a corporate structure that are telling them like, no, we don't have the budget to do this. And yes, they have to really fight for, you know,
sure,
fun, fight for, yes, the right brain, fight for bihemispheric, absolutely, brain activity. But it's such a true, it's such a great point to bring up. And it does circle back to, though, the other side of pain, but letting, mm-hmm, pain be there, letting the fun be there. And that's, you know, one of my main core, yeah, concepts when I do, you know, hold space for leaders or for anyone, is that, you know, there are no bad parts in there. There, everyone, right, has their purpose. It's just about how we integrate them and how we organize them, the different versions of us, how we show up. Can we be attuned, you know? And when I see that come into fruition, and you know, you said earlier too about having courage in your intro. You said it takes, yeah, courage to do that, and to really focus, right, on my consciousness. Yeah. I feel like that, you know, that is such a true statement of, and yet those are things we have to earn, because we, yes, they're our birthright, but then they get taken away through different experiences. Right. And the leaders that are willing to do that inner work and evolve themselves, it always converts over to their business and structures and everything, you know.
Excellent. Very well said, Dr. Hansen. How will my audience find you?
Easiest way to find me these days is my website, which is hansonhealing.com. It's just my last name, Hanson, the word healing.com. And that's where you can find me.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hansen. I will be right back. This is the Super Conscious Leader. And please do not go anywhere. We'll be right back with Dr. Jesse Hansen. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Imagine partnering with a firm that fuses lean precision with AI foresight, turning every process into a profit engine built on the foundation of operational excellence. Hi, I am Dr. Adil Dalal, founder and CEO of Pinnacle Process Solutions. For 20 years, we have empowered over 9,500 leaders across 25 industries and 5 continents, and delivered savings from $1 million to $39 million via rapid transformations using AI, digital tools, lean, agile, and Six Sigma technologies. Through our award-winning workshops, lean AI frameworks, and human-centric coaching, we elevate culture, eliminate waste, and ignite sustainable operational excellence. Elevate your people, accelerate your performance. Visit pinnacleprocess.com and reach your pinnacle today. And we're back. Let's continue this powerful conversation. Welcome back to A Super Conscious Leader. You can watch this show at 3 p.m. Central every Saturday on Now Media TV. And if you miss it live, then you can always download the Roku app, iOS app, or you can catch it on Spotify, iHeartRadio. So Now Media is here whenever you are, and you can catch it live, or you can catch it whenever you have the time. We're back with Dr. Jesse Hansen. We've had a couple of amazing segments with him. This segment, we're getting into a little bit of the science. We're going to convert the trauma into growth. So Dr. Jesse Hansen, if you may just educate my audience on the neuroscience of growth, and how does the brain development, you know, from the early stages to the adult stage, how does it have an impact on overcoming this trauma as we grow up?
Beautiful question, important question. And I've already done a decent job of articulating the different types of trauma. So I'm going to share another quick piece with our listeners to help understand how the original growth happens, which is simply conception, birth, childhood into adult years. And I can share that quickly, but just to say is that often we forget, we know now very clearly in neuroscience world that a key to health is bihemispheric brain activity. The corpus callosum, the nerve ganglia here that swirls the information back and forth. And the more it's studied, the more the language is becoming that it is almost as if there really are two separate brains, two separate people, you could almost say, that are in there. And this quick story I'll tell is going to help everyone understand really what is left and right brain, because the common answer you see in the Googleverse is, you know, oh, left brain is for thinking and logic and right brain is for art and music and crying. And there is some truth to that. I'm not saying it's wrong. It is deeper than that, and it's more dynamic. And so as we are being created, conception in mother's womb, what's happening in there is that left brain is all the matter is getting formed, but really in terms of electromagnetic energy and neuronal networks being formed, it is the right brain. And so I offer that to our listeners. The right brain is not just art and music, but it is the beingness of who we are. It is simply the I am consciousness. I exist. Right. I am a being. Before I know my name, before I know that I even need food to survive, all these things, only at about a year and a half to 2 years, sometimes as late as 2.5 years, the left brain really starts to form. What do we like to call this time? The terrible twos, AKA I'm starting to figure things out. I'm starting to take all that data from the right brain, just that's all called somatic data or implicit data, warm data. And it's literally just like an animal or a baby having an experience. They don't have to have a lot of fancy words to put on it, but then we do. And then we start to develop what's called our will and the beginning of our ego. And so it's only at that time that the left brain starts to come on. Yet if the right brain isn't getting all of that information from being a human, from being a being, the left brain has nothing to do. And even as it, and then as it gets the information, it's a mixture of, I do think there's some genetic codings in this in terms of how control works, but I also believe that a lot of it is systemic, cultural, familiar, religious, but there's all these constructs that we've created that that sort of empower the left brain to say, well, I need to control you. I need to make sure you don't cry when I don't want you to cry. I don't want to make sure you don't scream when I don't want you to scream. Whereas a baby and an animal, they just go, you know, they shake, they do whatever. They're inhibitionless in that way. And I'm a full advocate that we need both brains and we can't all just be running around like babies through our whole life. Right? And yet when we can understand this and then what's meant to happen in genetic source codes, kind of original programming is, now the left brain's off, but guess what? We're fostered, we're loved, we're nurtured, we're taught to be a kid. The right brain grows. Oh, get a little more schooling, a little more training. The left brain grows, this grows, that grows, and they swirl. And the bihemispheric brain activity, that's proper growth. That's original growth, that the more we have traumas, physical, sexual, acute, developmental, neglect, rejection, whatever, guess what happens is the right brain gets pushed down because why? It hurts. It hurts too much to feel that pain. And so we get better at left brain activities and we become more robotic. We become less human. And it's okay. It all happens to all of us. There's no judgment. It's that becoming conscious means becoming bihemispheric again. And it's not only that it's like feelings and crying and being weak. It's our insights. Yeah. It's our creativity. It's our pineal gland, the you know, in ancient times called the third eye or the seat of the soul, the seeing. And so if we honor that piece of how growth happens originally and then look at how do we turn trauma into growth?
Right.
We have to, first of all, create using the left brain, create some intellect, understanding, being able to talk about it, being able to accept or acknowledge what has happened. And then there are many different techniques of which I've been studying for 20 years, such as EMDR, sensory motor psychotherapy, brain mapping, you know, their visualizations, which I can't wait to talk with you about in a few minutes here, is that, you know, there's all these techniques, but there are ways that we know how to get back in the right brain. And the clinical language is called sequencing. Sequencing means releasing the stored electromagnetic energy, neuromuscular energies, And when that happens, I feel good again. I feel better. I feel alive. I can feel like things. And then I have to rejig it. But we at any age, we can reactivate this original growth pattern, you know?
I think what you said is so beautifully explained. Thank you very much. And it reminds me of one of my favorite people is Dr. Wayne Dreyer.
Yes.
He had he really was a super conscious soul. And what he mentioned was very, insightful, is saying for 9 months as we are growing, we are trusting the universe to form our, brain, to form our body, our eyes, our, arms, everything. We're letting the universe do it for us. As soon as we come out and we get the, as you said, the left brain starts developing, we start getting an identity, we no longer trust the universe. We want to do things ourselves.
Control it.
And that is really the control. And that is a lot of the things is where I always believe the universe is much more intelligent than any of us. And sometimes you let the universe do things for us. Trust. And leaders have a lot of ego, and that ego makes them control freaks. And that is also the seed of a lot of the trauma that is created in them. And one of the things, I've worked with a lot of leaders, and I've written the book, The V Factor, Power of Visualization. And I use power of visualization, cybernetics, psycho-cybernetics is another really great way to get people to understand themselves better. And what I do is I help people really visualize the future version of themselves. And it really changes them. It really makes them see what it can do. How have you used visualization in your therapy, and how powerful is that tool for you?
One of the most powerful. And the biggest challenge I have as a therapist is helping people believe that. I'm going to start referring your book now. No, I need to start referring your book. And there's tons, there's other brilliant minds out there that know this. Dr. Joe Dispenza, Wayne Dreyer. It's there. My version on it is this: the experiential and imaginal brain respond the exact same. We know that very, very finite, very clinically approved data that we know that. And a great example is dreams. Oftentimes you wake up, oh my gosh, was that real? No. But the body's responding as if it was real. Yes. So to me, that's all the real left brain data that anyone would really need to know to be like, well, why don't I at least try it on? Why don't I at least give the potential of that? So to deepen that and share a couple quick stories is that one, the imagination is more a function of the right brain, though there's left brain elements of it. And that, to say even just the practice of imagining or visualizing is stimulating the right brain and getting that bihemispheric brain activity going. So it's a great practice, even if you don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. When you actually know what you're doing and you're working with the quantum field and the law of attraction and the power of what I think about, I draw towards me. There you go. There's Joe Dispenza's work. Respect to him.
And right, his exactly.
In my work, I believe and I see how all of us humans, we have this one body, but within this one body, there are trillions of neural networks that can coagulate and conglomerate into all sorts of different arrangements, but they equal different parts of self. And we always talk about this very, part of me wants the pizza, but part of me knows I should eat the salad. But we don't, we say that stuff, but we don't often realize it literally as if there could be more than one person in there, and we have to choose who we want to bring forward. And so I often with my clients visualize the corporate leader version of them versus the little boy who just wants to go surfing versus the lover who feels neglected versus, and so that's how I often use it and see it. And it's very consistent with myself and others that when people start to use this power of visualization intrapsychically, the way they're able to make choices changes for the better.
Changes them for the, absolutely. Yeah. And I really believe that is the secret superpower of leaders, if they learn how to do that. It is sadly a lost art, because in the ancient times, they really knew how to use that. And we've lost that. It is an inbuilt simulator. And we just, Dr. Hansen, next segment, we're going to get into what you talk about, the mind, body, spirit, a lot of leaders are mostly in the mind and body. The spirit gets neglected. Let's go a little bit into that, because corporate world doesn't understand how powerful bringing spirit into a corporate life can be. So thank you, folks. Do not go anywhere. We'll be right back on A Super Conscious Leader. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Imagine partnering with a firm that fuses lean precision with AI foresight, turning every process into a profit engine built on the foundation of operational excellence. Hi, I am Dr. Adil Dalal, founder and CEO of Pinnacle Process Solutions. For 20 years, we have empowered over 9,500 leaders across 25 industries and 5 continents and delivered savings from $1 million to $39 million via rapid transformations using AI, digital tools, lean, agile, and Six Sigma technologies. Through our award-winning workshops, lean AI frameworks, and human-centric coaching, we elevate culture, eliminate waste, and ignite sustainable operational excellence. Elevate your people, accelerate your performance. Visit pinnacleprocess.com and reach your pinnacle today. And we're back. Let's continue this powerful conversation. Welcome back to The Super Conscious Leader. We're here with Dr. Jesse Hansen, and we're going deep into the topic of trauma, growth, and how leaders can overcome stress and be the super conscious leader they need to be in the age of AI. So welcome back, Dr. Hansen. Really glad to have you. It's been an amazing 3 segments. Let's wrap it up with some really getting deep into the idea of spirituality. You know, I think I would just want to let the audience know that behind you is not a screensaver. You're in Costa Rica, and this is nature. And we've lost that. We've lost the touch with nature. We've lost the touch with our inner self. And when we only focus on the mind and body, we're losing a third of our being. So how do corporations, what is your advice for corporations to bring spirituality into their corporate life without, you know, linking it to religion and other dogmas which exist? So what is your advice, Doctor?
And without being too woo-woo, right, as it's often called in the colloquial vernacular, right, to not be too out there. So yeah, what comes to me first is, as you brought this topic up, I wanted to do my best to sort of translate the idea of spirituality with the neuroscience of it first, and then from there kind of find what's the wisdom and how leaders use this. And I admit this is much more from my own musings than any research I've found, but as I'm sitting with it, it's this notion that, well, really, what is spirit? It is the part of us that wants to be kind, the part of us that wants to be kind to ourselves and others, that wants to be joyful, right?
Yes.
And so if we look at it that way, like you said, not attaching it to any specific religion or spiritual practice, if we just look at what does it mean when we have spirit, when we're in, have a spiritual practice, it's like we're doing something to better ourselves. We're doing something to want to show up with more kindness and ultimately to want to understand why I do what I do, right?
Yeah.
And so if we look at it that way, I would almost see it as, you know, when we are filled with spirit, as a saying might say, our cerebrospinal fluid is flowing beautifully. Our muscles are not too loose, not too tight. You know, there's almost like a homeostatic balance, balance that exists. And that's why so often spiritual pictures are of people cross-legged, meditating, sort of holding themselves in a kind way. And I feel like if we honor that, then it's also to say, well, why wouldn't we want our nervous systems to, and to go really specific, this would be called the polyvagal part of our nervous system connected to the parasympathetic, which is also, again, one of the main goals of brain health. So that way, spirit really is sort of the optimal brain health, where we're not just a mind trying to control a body, a left brain trying to control a right brain, but we are the bihemispheric brain knowing, yes, I've got stuff I got to get done, and I've got kids that love me, or I've got to show my coworkers love because they're human.
Very true.
So assuming that, I'm getting the nods from you. So the resonance there of that, then really, I think it's a conglomerate of some of the things we've already discussed in earlier segments of allowing there to be fun in the workshop, in the workplace, allowing there to be more okayness with a leader or anyone else having emotions that aren't perfect. And then of course that some obvious easy solutions are, and some of the stuff that I've done in my past career in big cities is around bringing spirit in, is simply like guiding them through meditation together, guiding them through a sound healing journey, adding in a little bit of maybe group sharing. Like it's not rocket science. It's already there, right? It's already there in us. We've just agreed on this culture that says that part's not allowed. And I love what you just said too. It's like, if we don't have this, we're missing out on a third of our beingness. Yeah. And as I've highlighted, we're missing out on possibly the most important third, the bagel, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings the healing. The spirit is what will heal. And, you know, the thing is, without that, when we talk about mindfulness, and I honestly don't like that word mindfulness, because technically it should be mindlessness, because we are always mindful. We're always full of things in our mind. Okay. What meditation is really letting go, allowing that being, allowing that, you know, spiritual being of yourself to take a little control of yourself and trusting it. It really allows you to understand yourself better. When you're able to let go for yourself, you allow little space for your teams to. You do not hold them tight. And that allows them to be more creative. So it is a impact which has corporate-wide. So leaders who know how to do that, who know how to let go of a little control, can be really dynamically change their workplace. The corporate culture transforms, and it can be an amazing experience for everyone, not just themselves. So I really want to see how we can teach our leaders to do some of the letting go. What have you seen? How can we get that into our corporate culture now?
Just highlighting that name, you named the trickle-down effect of, one leader being courageous to show the practice of letting go inspires it in others. And so I love what you're saying there. And I would just say that, again, I said earlier that I have seen it as something that needs to be earned. There's a reason that is usually, though there are corporate pressures and productivity and profit and all those pressures, there's usually pressures that happen before, like childhood, where there's a reason why I'll be the role play of this person. There's a reason why I built those control mechanisms. There's a reason why I started acting that way in the first place. And it often goes back to our childhood. So to me, it's the leaders, like the only ones I've seen it do it genuinely and not just sort of from like a bypass kind of way of like, fine, I'll just let it go. But to really genuinely embody that are the ones that have had the courage to be super conscious and to do the work. And to really, help heal that inner child, help that place from where it came from. And what's wild is that oftentimes, if not every time, their overall productivity and everything goes up. It's like the fear is, if I don't hold it together, this is all going to fall apart. But ironically, and you said something last segment so powerful, which was that, in the womb, we don't even realize it, but we're fully trusting the universe to build our body. And that's faith. That's surrender. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the somatic practices that I do with my clients are around this practice of letting go, whether that's emotionally, physically, just even one of the things I bug people all the time about is softening the jawbone. And that's a fun one for our listeners, is just to know that you know, per de facto settings of physics and gravity and neuromuscular intelligence, our jawbone's not meant to be tight all the time. That's a byproduct of the left brain hyperactivity. So even as a leader, as any human, if I just practice softening my jawbone every so often, more often, more often, that already starts to help that experience of, okay, maybe I can trust, right? And there's a huge overlay of faith, you know, and it doesn't have to be in any particular religious or spiritual deity or entity or anything. It just has to be faith, that just the same faith that built me in the womb. Somehow I got here, like keep taking care of me, you know?
Very true. Excellent.
I think that's the only genuine way. Anything other than that is a coping skill, is something that coping with it as opposed to really getting to the roots of it.
That's
it's just so rewarding too to witness these guys go through these processes and face this stuff that they've long buried and thought was fine, and then to see them change as leaders is it's really truly incredible, you know.
Excellent. Very well said. Dr. Hansen, what can you advise the audience here? Leaders who are struggling with trauma, pain, or even, you know, leaders who feel they are very confident, what do you advise on getting to that superconscious level? What would be something they can do on a daily basis which will start making that shift for them?
Simple, easy, free one. Soften the jaw. Soft jaw. You know, it's amazing. I've gotten the feedback from people that were, you know, doubting or whatever, and they're like, okay, I've been doing it for like a month now, and I hate to admit it, but I do feel more relaxed. I do feel I can make a different choice when I'm practicing the soft jaw technique. Beyond that, like, again, some of this is obvious, and yet it's good to just remind people it is that simple and easy, is a meditation practice, any kind of embodiment practice. Meditation does not have to be perfect Zen sitting still. There's such thing as Zazen, walking meditations, different styles of movement meditation, more of just the practice of slowing down in our body is another really simple one that starts to help open up consciousness. And then to me, after that, you know, after things like that, that fit in that soul realm, saunas, cold plunges, working out, bike riding, all sort of these obvious things, the next layers of depth would be, you know, starting to do personal development work on themselves and really look at where does this, why do I want to relate to pressure in this way? Right.
Excellent.
And that's where I see. And then that's something that, I've been guiding both, you know, personal and group experiences like that for the last 20 years. And, you know, it's just, it's so consistent where I see that's the next level of change, where getting back home, even if they miss a meditation, they're still okay. Still great to meditate, but it's not like before. It's like, oh my gosh, if I don't do my breath work in the morning, I'm a monster. It's like, well, you can get to the roots of that monster, and then you can still do breath work when it fits, but not as a, you know, catch-all, right? Or a coping mechanism.
Excellent. Thank you very much. That is very insightful. And Dr. Hansen, you know, in the last minute we have, if you can share, where can my audience find you? And any final words you have of wisdom, if you can share very quickly, that would be great.
Thank you. Yes, you can find me at my website, hansonhealing.com. That's my last name, H-A-N-S-O-N, the word healing.com. And my final words of wisdom is simply that this is it's about the journey, not the destination. And what really matters is showing up. What really matters is that you're even listening to this, lets you know that some parts of you do want to be more conscious. And that's what matters. And then finding what fits into the rhythms of your life, what fits into the levels of your current courage to look deeper and trust that at least for the time, that is enough, you know, and that all of us are here for the same reason, to awaken, to learn how to be joy, to learn how to be love and joy. And that can happen even as a leader, you know, even when we take on more responsibility, there's still ways to learn how to relate to it. Joyful ways, but it we have to do some work to earn that.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Hansen. This has been a truly inspiring session and an inspiring show. So thank you for being a really valuable guest on this Super Conscious Leader. So folks, please get in touch with Dr. Hansen. You're going to really learn a lot. And Please do not miss a single episode of A Superconscious Leader. I'm your host, Dr. Adil Dalal, and you can catch us every Saturday at 3 p.m. Central on Now Media TV, or you can download the Roku or iOS app and catch us there. You can go to YouTube, Superconscious Leader, or you can just follow us on Now Media TV, nowmedia.tv, and you can catch the show anytime. So do not miss any episode, and we'll see you next week. Please be with us and start getting into the mode of superconsciousness. Remember, in the age of AI, you do not need to be superhuman. You just need to be superconscious. Thank you.